Okay, I'm Jesse, Jesse Schmitz, and today is December 29th, 2017. I'm talking with Diego Chabuco, and we are at the Scrap Exchange in Durham, North Carolina, where we worked together for 3 years. We were both assistant managers in the retail store. So I met Diego when I started at the Scrap Exchange 3 years ago, and Diego's pretty quiet, and you know, I didn't know that much about him except that he was a runner. he definitely did marathons and all the 5Ks and stuff that are in town, and he wore the t-shirts to prove it. And also a t-shirt that said, exercise? I thought you said extra fries. yeah, so we worked together and got to know each other like that.
Okay, so my name, like as you said, my name is Diego Chabuco. I'm from Lima, Peru. I have been living in the U.S. for 15 years. I came to the U.S. at the age of 15 years old in March 6th of 2002. Like you said, I'm a runner. I have done all kinds of races, half marathons, full marathons, 5K races, 10K races, 20K races, mud runs, everything, you name it. I am also an artist as well as a photographer. Those are two of my main hobbies. And now I'm slowly getting introduced to this golf, thanks to my thanks to another coworker of mine, who is also my supervisor now. what else I can say about myself?
I can ask the question.
All right.
Okay, so I knew that Diego, I knew you had immigrated. I knew you were from Peru just from working with you, but I did not know what your immigration status was or that you had DACA until recently when I started working with a group in Rome after I left the Scrap Exchange and abandoned you here. and you posted something on Facebook about having DACA status. So I wanted to learn more about that. And so, yeah, tell me about your childhood and growing up, and who did you live with growing up? And you came here in 2002, you said, and what was it like before that? Who did you live with, and then who did you come here with, and what was that like?
All right. So during my childhood, of course, I live in Lima. I live with my, you know, mom and dad and two brothers, as well as some of my extended family members. We were just a regular, you know, family, you know, caring on each other. So I went to school down there. I didn't do very well at school when I was a kid. Anyway, you know, I played with my brothers and the neighborhood kids. You know, everything was really quiet and normal and relaxing. You know, we had our, you know, down moments as well as our up moments. You know, it was just like a, you know, regular you know, family living. Of course, we were not rich, but also we were not that poor. But you know, sometimes we would struggle, you know, economically, because, you know, Peru is not a rich country, you know, it's still a developing country, you know. But, you know, slowly the country is, you know, is moving forward, you know, and poverty has be decreasing over the last few decades. But still, you know, like I said, we were not the rich or the poor, but, you know, we still had some financial struggles.
What did your parents do in Lima?
My mother was a nurse. She worked at the hospital of the police force. My father was a police officer.
Okay. When you came to the U.S., you said, I know you stayed with an aunt here, mm-hmm. who was a minister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she worked for a church and a minister. How did she come to the U.S.? That's, like, interesting story. How did she come as a minister? Or was she here all along? I don't know.
My aunt was an ordained minister down in Peru. And then she went to Costa Rica to study. She will travel between Peru and Costa Rica to study. And at some point, she met Dr. Herzog. He was a professor of theology at Duke University.
Yeah.
So through him, she was able to get a scholarship to study at Duke University. So she came to Durham in the late 1990s and to study at Duke, and she got a master's degree from Duke University. You know, and after that, she started working for the North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church.
Cool. That's neat. What was it like when you first arrived here? And do you remember your first day in the U.S., your first day here? I mean, you said it was May 6th, 2002.
March
6th, 2002. One of those M months.
So, you know, March 6th, we left really early in the morning. We left Lima really early in the morning, you know, of course, by airplane. You know, we arrived in Miami, and then there we had to wait so many hours to get a flight to RDG because the flight got delayed several mm-hmm. times. And then we finally arrived to RDU like really late, around 11 or midnight. So my first day, my official first. Then, you know, it was a really sunny, really chilly winter day. You know, I was all, you know, really excited because I have never experienced cold temperatures, and before where I'm from, most of the time, or I should say for the whole year, temperatures are in the upper 60s and 70s all year long. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, a really cool thing to experience cold temperatures. You know, I was really excited because I really wanted to see the snow. I have never seen the snow before, but of course for that I had to wait a couple of months until, you know, next winter. So we arrived in Durham, then my mom and younger brother stay with my aunt. On that day we went to Costco. So it was like my first opportunity to experience a real, you know, American, you know, supermarket. And then, you know, we just got some a couple of things, and then we went home, and then we prepared some Peruvian food.
Costco is a big American thing to go to on your first day.
I think that's the most exciting part of my first day here. But my brother and I did not immediately start school. When we came, we had to wait until the fall to start school. If anything is that Usually, down in Peru, the school calendar is different. But because, you know, Peru is in the southern hemisphere, so the seasons are completely different. So, so usually, down there, school starts in late March or April, and then ends in December. And you have, you know, the half of December, then and January and February off, because those are the, you know, summer months. So when we arrived, we already had like what 2.5 months off of school, and then we experienced the summer here, so we were out of school for several months until, you know.
Did you make friends when over the summer, or did you meet kids, or did you have to wait till school to do that?
No, actually, you know, I had to wait until school for that. Most of the time, my brother and I were just, you know, at the house playing, or we would go outside and play. But, you know, we didn't know anyone at the moment. Also, you know, our English was really limited, you know. I mean, they teach you English down in Peru as a second language, but, of course, you know, I was not the greatest student down there, so.
Yeah. What was it like when you started school? What was your first day or week of school like here? Was it scary because you were still practicing English, or were you really excited, or what?
I would say it was quite an experience. I was anxious because, you know, I had really limited knowledge of the language, and I was telling myself maybe I should have spent the summer trying to learn English. And then I would be better prepared for this. But, you know, at that point, you know, school started and they have any other option. You know, I was scared and anxious, like I said. After my first day of school, actually for my first day of school, I got lost trying to find a classroom. So that wasn't quite pleasant. But when the first day was over, I was like, I don't think I can do this.
Oh, did you meet any other kids on your first day of school?
I was placed, you know, in the ELSA class, so I met other, kids who didn't know much English, so we were kind of in the same boat. So, you know, eventually, because we spoke the same first language, we became friends.
That makes sense, yeah.
But I would have to say that I was able to pick up the language really quick. You know, after just a few months, I was able to, you know, understand what most of the things that people were saying.
Can you tell me about some difficult moments? I know you told me earlier about getting bullied because kids thought you were gay, and was that in middle school or high school?
High school.
In high school. And can you tell me about that, or were there other difficult moments or people who, things that were especially difficult, other than learning the language and starting a new school and the, like, you know, all the things that were difficult here?
Yeah, like I told you earlier, I was bullied for a few weeks because someone thought I was gay. And that happened during my sophomore year of high school. Apparently, this kid thought I was gay because when he was leaving the bus, I said to him, "Ciao," which we say in Peru, you know, as saying goodbye. And then he thought that that's something that only gay people say. So he started, you know, bothering me, you know, calling me gay, you know, like you, right when you sent me the question, I was kind of terrified by the notion of me being gay. You know, because, you know, we grew up in a society you know, those 10 years, you know, being gay or the notion of, you know, and the notion of having someone be gay, you know, it was kind of a taboo. I mean, it still really is, but, you know, back then it was even worse.
Even more so.
Yeah, you know, I was terrified by the notion of being gay, you know. So, you know, like, you will, you know, call me gay, and I will just try to ignore it, you know. I was not trying to, I didn't want that, what is that word I'm looking for? I didn't want that to get on my nerves, you know. But eventually, you know, the bullying continued. So, you know, one day I just decided to stoop by myself, and I confronted this person, you know. So basically, I asked this person to stop bothering me, you know, and I made the argument that, you know, I'm not gay. And, you know, and after that, the bullying stopped. However, back in my high school years, you know, I knew that I was attracted to guys. I felt that that was just normal, that eventually it will go away, and eventually I will feel attracted to girls, you know. Oh. So I was just, you know, ignoring those feelings, and I was trying to have, you know, a normal life, just like everyone else. So I was, in high school, you know, I experienced those feelings of attraction towards, you know, guys, and I just ignored those feelings, and, you know, I was pretty much in the closet through high school and my early years of college.
So what made you decide to come out, and when and how did that happen, and how did it go?
All right, so when I was in college, when I was at Durham Tech, you know, I will still experience...
Sorry, you went to Durham Tech?
Durham Tech first. Mm-hmm. I will still experience, you know, the feeling, those feelings of attraction mm-hmm. towards, you know, guys, you know, and the feelings, you know, got stronger, you know. While I was still, you know, trying to, you know, ignore those feelings and suppress those feelings. No feelings. Like you read before, you know, I used to be kind of homophobic because, you know, I was kind of terrified of the notion of me being gay.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, eventually I was a little bit more open to the notion of me being gay. When was this? In the summer of 2009, I took this class called American Women's Studies. So in that class, you know, I learned about, you know, the women's rights movement as well as the gay rights movement, you know. And in the class, I learned that, you know, being gay is okay. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. I also learned about the systems of, you know, privilege and oppression, you know, and all of that. So that class gave me the final push so I will eventually come out to myself. So I came out to myself the summer of 2009, and I officially came out to my family and other people on my birthday next year.
Oh. Wow, how did your family react? How, I find that really interesting that you took a class, first of all, and were then able to come out about it. I think that's really cool that you took a, you know, feminist studies class and came out. And but how did your family react? How was their reaction? I can hold it. You're moving around too much.
I know that my family is pretty liberal, so I knew that they would not have a problem with it, but of course I was anxious. Actually, the night before my birthday, I think I came out when I turned... Yeah, I think I came out when I turned 24 years old. So the night before I was really anxious, I was not able to sleep at all. You know, so the next morning, you know, my mom says, you know, my mom and my aunt say happy birthday to me, you know. Yeah, and that was a lot of thank you. And then I was like, I have something to tell you. You know, I just told them straight, you know, I'm gay.
What did your mom say?
Oh, well, she said to me, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight or whatever, you know, we still love you. My aunt said the same thing. And actually, my brother found out that I'm gay way before my birthday, like a month before.
How did he find out?
So, you know, during like 2009, 2010, 2011, you know, that's when, you know, the bullying of LGBT kids hit the media. So there was a lot of talk about that, you know. And then I bought a book by, what's his name? Dan Savage. Mm-hmm. The book called It's Get Better, which is from the It's Get Better Project.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was reading the book, and then I was, I don't remember where I left the book, but my brother saw the book. So he noticed the book, he said to me, Diego, don't be gay. And I said to him, I'm gay. And he was like, oh, brother.
And then what happened?
No, nothing. And I mean, he's pretty liberal too, but.
Yeah. And so you guys are still, I mean, you're close. You are, he accepted you, he didn't.
Yeah, we're still close. We live together and we drive each other insane, just like brothers do.
Cool. So when did you, back to DACA, unless you want to talk more about coming out, do you want to? But I was thinking about DACA again. When did you first get DACA status, and what, you know, what made you decide to do that? How did that come about? What were you thinking? What were you thinking when you got DACA status, and why did you decide to? What did you think when you first heard about Obama declaring a DACA thing?
Do you remember when DACA came out? What year? It was in the summer of, I don't remember, was it 2012 or 2013? It was 5 years. 2012. Yeah, I had DACA for 5 years now. Yeah, it will be 2012, summer of 2012, you know. I remember that I got a call from my aunt. Because she's a pastor, she also did a lot of work with immigrants. So I got a call from my aunt, and she was mentioning that Obama was going to make some type of announcement regarding Dreamers, and then all rumors started, you know, going around. Some people were saying that Obama was going to pass the Dream Act through an executive order, you know. So, you know, we were all, my brother and I and my mom were all watching the TV, you know. So, and then Obama came out, and then he, you know, made the official announcement about, you know, implementing DACA. You know, for several years, my brother and I waited for the Dream Act to pass Congress, but, you know, because of the partisan politics, it never passed. So, you know, DACA was the next best thing that we could do in order for my brother and I to have a life and, you know, develop as individuals within society. So DACA was announced, and then, you know, I think the same day all the forms for DACA were put on the webpage of Homeland Security. So, like I said before, my aunt did a lot of work with immigrants, but she also learned about filling out immigration forms. So my brother and I didn't apply for DACA immediately. We waited a little bit. My aunt was, you know, talking to lawyers, you know, getting more information about what we need and what we don't need, you know. And then my aunt actually was the one who filled out the paperwork for my brother and me.
Oh.
I mean, she has experience filling paperwork regarding immigration stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
As a pastor, you know, she filled out paperwork for people when they get married or they apply for a green card, you know, or citizenship, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, as you probably know, you know, one of the requirements for DACA was to provide proof that you have been living in the U.S. for a specific amount of years. So, good thing that my brother and I, you know, kept everything, you know, receipts, you know, diplomas, report cards, you know, everything, you know. So, you know, when the time for me about it came to apply for DACA, you know, we just had all the, you know, documents required for that. So we were not struggling to find documents.
Was there a change in your day-to-day life after receiving DACA? Was there anything different for you, or was it similar? What happened?
Oh, well, before DACA, obviously, I could not get a social security number. Without a social security number, of course, you cannot get a driver's license. You cannot apply for a job and get many other things that, you know, one needs to function here in this country. You know, as soon as, you know, as soon as my brother and I got DACA, you know, we were able to get our social security numbers, and then we were able to get our driver's license, and then, you know, we started applying for jobs. My brother was able to, you know, continue his education, as well as me. I was able to complete an internship. Before working at the Scrap Exchange, I did an internship at the Piedmont Wildlife Center. Because, you know, I needed something on my resume because I didn't have any work experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. So, yeah, I completed my internship at the Piedmont Wildlife Center, and after that, I applied to the Scrap Exchange.
Neat. What would you tell people? What would you tell people about DACA? People who aren't in the loop. People who don't know what DACA is about. What would you tell them about it?
There are a lot of people who don't know what DACA is about. You know, I have seen Facebook comments where people. When people write on social media about DACA, and they're just complete ignorant about DACA. First of all, DACA protects you from deportation, while at the same time gives you a work permit. DACA doesn't grant you a legal status. You cannot get a green card or a citizenship through DACA. Who's calling me?
What about citizenship? What about the current, you know, how did you feel when, so I guess I have two questions. Mm-hmm. How did you feel when, it was announced that Trump was rescinding DACA and, next year, and unless Congress passed a DREAM Act, took action, how did you hear about that? Do you remember what how you heard and how you felt about that?
Well, when Trump got elected for president, I knew that DACA was in danger. Before he got elected for president, he was like, I'm going to eliminate DACA, I want to get rid of these people. And then after, you know, he got elected as president, and then he changed mind. He was like, you know, I want to work something for these people.
Yeah.
But still, I was afraid that something really bad would happen to DACA. And then, back in the summer of this year, when I got home, my brother informed me that there were seven states who wanted to sue the Trump administration over DACA. They wanted to take DACA to the same federal court where an extension of DACA and DAPA got turned down. These states wanted to get rid of DACA, and they were trying to pressure the Trump administration to do that. So, you know, when I learned about that, I knew that things will start to get nasty. I know that this state gave the Trump administration a date to make a decision. It was at the beginning of September. I don't remember which date. So, you know, that's when I really started to get worried. And then, this whole situation started to, hit me hard. When the announcement was made, that was a really rough day for me. That was a really rough day for me, in addition of dealing with all the, stress at work and then having to, worry about this, that was like really, a hard hit.
What would happen if, have you thought about what would happen, what you would do if nothing happens and DACA is rescinded in next spring?
Well, I don't want to, think about that. I just want to concentrate, on the present. But, I know that, my DACA doesn't expire until late September of next year. So, I still have time. But still, that clock is ticking for me.
Yeah.
I know that, as soon as DACA, my DACA ends, I lose my driver's license, not able to work here anymore. That means, that I lose my health insurance, dental insurance, and disability insurance. Also that means I lose my source of income, then I cannot pay for my house that I bought, all kinds of, bad stuff.
Yeah. What would happen if magically you got citizenship tomorrow, or if somehow you got a U.S. citizenship tomorrow? Just, I don't know, we had a different Congress, or just magic happened, and what would be different? What would you do differently?
Well, if I got, U.S. citizenship, of course, that will change everything for me. And, I will no longer have to worry about, dealing with, Homeland Security of or U.S. and Immigration and Citizenship Services. I will be able to live like a normal life, and not have to worry about, filling out immigration forms or anything like that, I would be able to, apply for financial aid if I want to, continue my education,
Do you want to continue your education? Is that one of your goals?
Right now, I just want to focus on, being able to pay for my house, and then, work and keep, making money and save money.
You still have family in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get to see them? Do they ever come visit, or do you go visit them? And would that change if you, if your status changed?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not able to, you know, travel outside the country. Otherwise, if I do that, I cannot return. Before the Trump administration made changes to DACA, if you have DACA, you, in theory, you could travel outside the country only under three circumstances: work, education, or a family emergency. Well, of course, you know. Of course, that's kind of tricky because, you know, there's always, if you leave the country, there's always a possibility that, you know, the immigration officers will not let you back inside the country, you know. With that being said, you know, there are a few occasions when, you know, some family members come over here, and then that's when I get to see him. But, you know, unfortunately, my brother and I cannot, you know, go back or leave the country to see those folks. Now, if I became a U.S. citizenship, of course, I would be able to, you know, travel, you know, outside the country or any part of the world and then return and not worry about, you know, dealing with immigration officers. Yeah, and that's something that I really hope, you know, one day it could happen, you know, have a U.S. citizenship or at least a green card so, you know, I could travel outside the country.
Yeah, that would be a big deal. So you told me in our emails, mm-hmm. you were talking about the most difficult thing that you've dealt with being anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
How did you, well, so you said that, I guess, tell me the story of experiencing that.
All right. So, so when I was in Durham Tech, I was experiencing really bad social anxiety. I knew that, you know, the anxiety was irrational. You know, and like I said, in the email that I sent to you know, when it was the semester class, I would get extremely anxious for my first day of classes. And the anxiety was so bad, or the, you know, irrational fear was so bad that, you know, I would just end up dropping classes after the first class meeting, you know. I knew that the decision I took in regards to dropping classes was not the best decision because, you know, I knew that I'm a really good student. I knew that, you know, I was just giving up without trying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was kind of really tough for me. Because, you know, I will end up always dropping classes at the beginning of each semester. You know, it took me way more time to complete my associate degree. Before the start of classes during each semester, I will experience, during the few weeks before classes started, I will experience a really bad anxiety. You know, I will never be able to sleep, you know, at night, and then I will wake up with anxiety and then go to bed, you know, feeling anxious. So eventually, during those years, it was only anxiety. I didn't deal with any depression. So eventually, I went to a counselor. You know, a counselor recommended me to see, you know, a mental health specialist. So, you know, I saw a mental health specialist, and then I just started taking medications, as well as participated in cognitive and behavioral therapy.
How did you, when you first saw the counselor, how did you decide to go to a counselor? How did you know? And I guess I have a similar experience. I experienced severe depression and when I was living in D.C. after college, and maybe associated with the weather, with, you know, how people have the winter blues and stuff, but I had a lot of trouble realizing and actually getting to going to a therapist, and, you know, realizing that it was something that I could help myself with. And I had a lot of encouragement from my parents, but it was hard for me to actually find and go to a therapist. How did you do that? How did you make that decision? Why did you end up going to a counselor?
You know, I knew that, you know, what I was experiencing was interfering with my studies. So, you know, one day I just said that, you know, I needed to make an appointment with a counselor at Duentech. So, you know, I went to the counselor, and I talked to her about, you know, about the things that I was experiencing. And unfortunately, the counselors at Duentech do not deal with mental health issues like other counselors at other colleges do. So she recommended me to go, you know, to this place close to Durham Regional Hospital, you know, where they deal with, you know, mental health issues. And I was like, you know, I don't have anything to lose, you know, if I want to, you know, feel better, or, you know, have, you know, better resources to cope to this, you know, I need to go there. So, you know, I went there.
And are you still under control? Are you still seeing a therapist or taking medication, or do you still experience anxiety, or do you have that? I mean, everybody experiences anxiety.
Yeah.
Some, I know, but like, do you think you have it? How is it working?
Well, actually, before going into that, let me continue the story.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So, you know, after first seeing the mental health specialist, I started, you know, taking medication, and then I did a little bit of cognitive and behavioral therapy. And then for 2 or 3 years after that, I was feeling fine. I didn't have any issues with anxiety or depression. At one point, I started experiencing a really bad side effects. I was experiencing really, really bad diarrhea. You know, another gastrointestinal issues. And so, you know, at first I thought that it was something that I was eating. So, you know, I started to control my diet, you know, but I would still experience, you know, the same thing. So I thought that, oh, most likely, after eliminating, you know, all the possible causes in terms of, you know, my diet, I thought, oh, it must be the medication. So I stopped taking the medication, and then after, I think, few days or few weeks, you know, everything started to improve. So I went and I talked to my mental health specialist, you know, about, you know, the side effect that I was experiencing, and I told him that you know, I stopped taking the medications, and, you know, I have been feeling better, you know. So he suggested that maybe that I should go ahead and stop taking medications, you know. And then after a meeting with him, I was doing great for the next few weeks, you know. I didn't experience any GI problems, or any anxiety. And then all of a sudden, I think after a few weeks,